the pervasive nature of thyroid. I know it's becoming ubiquitous, and it's still somewhat of a mystery for me, because the longer I do this, the more I really believe that it's not a matter of if, but when you're going to get thyroid dysfunction if you're a woman.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes that we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So a little while ago, I put an all call out to my Instagram community, and I said, I want you to tag badasses for us to interview in the upcoming season. And I have been so fortunate to encounter and receive introductions to some incredible women doing amazing things in this world. And that is one of my guests today. McCall McPherson is a thyroid expert from Austin, but that does not do her background justice. Rather than pasting a typical bio in the forms that we send out to our guests, she shared with us a bit of her story, and there's some common themes that emerged. McCall is a quick starter. She was in a clinic, she was ready to start working with her patients with respect to thyroid, and no sooner had she walked in the door, literally within 8 hours, the clinic closed its doors. Within a very short time span, almost overnight, and she talks about this story in our interview, she founded a new clinic, completely changed the paradigm upon which she wanted to deliver care, and has been extremely successful in servicing patients, not only in her local community, but in the online space as well. This capacity to quick start emerged again when she was looking at post-hurricane rescue when she was in, she lives in Texas, and when Hurricane Harvey hit Houston in particular, she was struck with this idea of creating a crowdsourced community online in Facebook that would enable rescuers to reach people in need. Overnight, literally overnight, she had thousands of people in this group and armies of women around the world working to help dispatch rescuers. This is how she ended up on the stage with an incredible Hollywood actor, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for Hurricane Harvey victims. This woman is a badass encapsulated. We talk about her journey as a practitioner, her philosophy on building business, and the fundamental skills that she has as a person that help her to put all of these pieces in action. If you are looking for inspiration and want to hear the story of someone who is making a true difference, I have it for you now. My guest is McCall McPherson, and it is my pleasure to welcome her to the Entrepology Podcast. McCall McPherson, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to interview you. When we ask everyone to send us over their bio, and you put yours in, and you put it in as a bit of a narrative, and I read it and I was like, I've got to interview this woman. You have such an interesting background and have been up to so much. Can you share your story with us? And in doing so, I need you to also ensure that you explain why you were on stage with Matthew McConaughey on your Instagram account, because that in and of itself is intriguing to me. The floor is yours.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a random occurrence. So I'm a PA, and I, like you've already heard, I'm the co-founder of a medical practice in Austin. So my background is certainly in the medicine biology form of things. A practice that I worked at literally closed overnight and left me sort of out in the cold and needing to figure out what to do with my life of sorts. So I decided to go ahead and partner up with a doctor of mine that I had worked with. And we created Modern Medicine initially, and then later Modern Thyroid Clinic, out of like thin air. And really, when I created it, I expected it to be this, you know, small functional micro practice, no big deal, and really expected to keep like a very low lying kind of career as a mom as well. And it just sort of blew up within the first year. I was much, much busier and much more fortunate than I had anticipated to be in like 10 years. So from that, I sort of became an advocate for thyroid patients and moms in particular, women who are fatigued and burnt out. And my patients sort of created that niche for me without me really trying. And then, you know, to get even more random, Harvey hit Houston this year, and I grew up south of Houston. Now my practice and clinic is in Austin. And immediately, and I'll keep this kind of short, but immediately I was obviously looking at the news online, and below every news story was like 30 people begging for their lives. It was insane. So 911 emergency crews were flooded. Phones were busy for 5 days. So long story short, I very randomly created a technology platform for civilian rescuers to rescue trapped Harvey victims. And it went viral, like in one day, of course. Yeah. So that happened. We ended up rescuing over 2,000 people, and we were left with a pretty big platform for helping support these families as time went on. So we ended up having a fundraiser in Austin in September through a series of very fortunate events. Matthew McConaughey hosted the event with me. So yeah, we ended up raising $100,000 for Houston Harvey victims.
It's amazing.
Yeah. McConaughey's a very nice guy. I can vouch for him.
this is things I didn't expect to learn today.
Right. He's legitimately awesome.
That's really okay. So there are three things that you said there that I was like, we need to circle back on those. One is we just created a medical clinic out of thin air.
Right.
And well, I said three, but these are the two that actually we're going to circle back to. And two, overnight, you've just randomly created a technology that ended up saving 2,000 people. So I want to understand that a little bit more.
Right.
How did you build a clinic out of thin air? First of all, how did one clinic fall apart in an 8-hour period? And two, how did you just build that? Because you are on a Kobe score, you are a quick starter for sure.
That I am.
Yeah. But tell us a little bit more about one, how the one clinic had its demise, and two, you rebuilt something so quickly.
Right. So actually they kind of tie in together. So the one clinic demised very, very quickly because it markedly overspent and hoped to catch up later. And just was completely not sustainable. And then the flip side of that coin is a couple things. I started with very low overhead and began to look at medicine in a completely new way. So basically saying, I don't care how it's been done before. I want to change everything. In the practice of medicine, conventionally speaking, I wanted to get completely away from that. And also just in the realm of, I don't want to have 15 staff for every clinician. You know, I don't want to pay $10,000 a month in rent. So when you restructure that and look at it in a new way, it's easy to do to create something out of thin air. And it's the same with the Harvey situation. The key underlying thing that I've found for me on my path as an entrepreneur, and this is a pretty new facet for me about myself that I'm learning, but the thing that's helped me get to where I am, I think, is I just do it. You know, like it seems stupid or impossible, and there's always that still small voice in you that says it's not going to work. And that happened to me with Harvey. I had the idea in the shower. And by the time I got out of the shower and got to my computer, I was like, this is stupid. This isn't going to do anything. You know, that's that still small voice inside of you that's saying this is not possible. It's unrealistic. Why are you even going to waste your time? And then you respond to that voice by saying, if I make one small difference, it will matter. And then you move forward.
So what was the technology that you built or created or initiated?
Yeah, so I created a crowdsourced map. So basically I removed the middleman, because every middleman was completely overwhelmed and flooded with calls. So I created a crowdsourced map where victims or family members could post their exact location and kind of their triage status. How high is the water? How many children do you have, elderly, injured? And then I created a Facebook group, and this is so cool. So a Facebook group where people could go to post about family members, to find updates, resources, that sort of thing. And within a matter of 48 hours, women, almost all moms from across the world, started dispatching rescue crews for 24 hours a day.
Amazing. So,
incredible. Women from New Zealand and Australia took the night shift so that we could sleep. And then we'd wake up and switch shifts in the morning. I mean, all moms working for 5 days straight without, I mean, hardly eating, sleeping, showering, still taking care of their kids. It was remarkable.
How did they find your platform?
You know, at some point there was just a tipping point where it was just a viral situation and it was just spreading like wildfire. So it just started literally overnight. And by the time I woke up the next day, we had 800 people in our group, and then it ended up being 5,000 on the Facebook group. And so I would log into my Facebook account, and if I didn't look at it for 10 minutes, I would have like 90 notifications.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you always been entrepreneurial?
No. In fact, when I graduated graduate school, I said, I am never going to work for myself. I want to go work for someone else so I can clock in and clock out.
Well, how did that work out for you?
Yeah, right. It was pretty miserable. So eventually, you know, I was forced into this situation of either going and taking a job that I didn't like in conventional medicine when the functional medicine practice I worked at closed, or building really what I believed in and being able to cultivate the kind of care that I really want to give people.
And so do you now, from an entrepreneurial perspective, are you the kind of person who operates with this long-term strategic vision and you're building everything towards it? Or do you exist with what you've built, and as new things come to you, if they fit, you roll with them? Like, what is your philosophical approach to initiative as someone who likes to start things so quickly?
Right. So it's definitely not a long strategic plan. In fact, I need more of that in my life. For me, it's say yes to opportunities and see where they take you.
I like
that. Put yourself out there and see what happens.
And have there been times where that hasn't worked for you?
For sure. Or I've been too afraid to do it, you know, and I've been the thing holding myself back. I think it's an evolution. And then when you do get turned down, when you get shot down, if you just put yourself out there enough, it's 1 in 100 opportunities, you know, so who cares? You move on.
And so how do you do that? Because I know that there are people listening who are like, oh, I want to do that. I have all these ideas, but I can't take action. Or every time they're about to take action, they go, they ignore the majority of evidence about their history, and they focus in on that one time it didn't work. And they use that to support their ethos that nothing's ever going to work again. So what is different about your psychology, and how did you get to that space? Because that's an experienced space that enables you to just take charge and have the confidence to take charge.
Yeah, I think part of it is an unhealthy nature about me, to be perfectly honest, to, at least for my medical practice, to build it in such a way that no matter what happens, I only rely on myself for my core stability. So no one can take the baby that I've built of this one thing, whatever that one thing is for you, away. And everything else is risk worthy. Right? Expansion is always worth taking the risk. You don't have to trade your security in order to expand or keep it to where you don't. You know what I mean? Don't make your risk so high that you're willing to give up the baby that you've built.
Right. I like that. There's a certain confidence that comes from that. I was talking to some practitioners yesterday who were trying to balance out this idea of building their dream clinic versus going and spending some time working in a clinic where they could have some established cash flow. And I was like, you've got to be able to differentiate the emotional decision from the smart business decision. But I think you commenting on needing that foundation is so on point.
Right. And if you are not afraid to look at things in a different way, you can have your medical practice and build it. You can start small. You know, you can start so small that it's safe. And then as you get bigger, you can always expand. But if you don't sign up for more than what is secure and safe for you, then you're still in an okay position, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. It's funny, I had a patient in my office recently and we were talking about an initiative that we have going on. And he looked at me and he's like, what's the one decision you need to make with respect to this initiative that would decrease the risk of moving forward? And I thought it was such a smart, intelligent decision, because there's always one thing you can do to really significantly decrease or hedge that risk. And we hear that from all of these great business leaders, right? Like Richard Branson talks about it and Ray Dalio talks about it. It's always about hedging that risk. So I think it's such an important point that you bring up.
Wow, that's cool. I actually had never heard that. Thank you for that.
This is why these conversations are fun, right?
Right. I love it.
So let's take this concept that we're talking about in business and let's apply this to health. Because I always find there's similarities between business and health. I think that this notion of creating a foundation upon which we can live our lives or build what we want to create in this world is a perfect description of how we should be managing our health. And thyroid is something that is so pervasive for women, and it interrupts that foundation for so many women. Why do you think this is such an issue for us right now? Is it pollution? Is it empowerment? Like, what is it?
First of all, you just blew my mind with the analogy that you just said, and I want to circle back to that in a minute. Incredible. I love that. The pervasive nature of thyroid. I know it's becoming ubiquitous, and it's still somewhat of a mystery for me, because the longer I do this, the more I really believe that it's not a matter of if, but when you're going to get thyroid dysfunction if you're a woman. So I don't think it's almost inescapable, kind of like vitamin D deficiency. For the last decade, I've been testing people's vitamin D. Twice someone's returned normal that isn't supplementing. You know what I mean? It's just right Everywhere. And I think part of it is endocrine disruptors that are, you know, that we're exposed to constantly. Part of it is the nature of being a woman and being pro-inflammatory and having children, which then very, very commonly triggers autoimmune disease, Hashimoto's included, which then propagates hypothyroidism.
I was just struck by this notion of having children propagates and perpetuates autoimmune disorders.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, one of the most common stories I hear is moms that come in and who are just really hardly functioning. And they say, well, you know, I had my first baby and I was really tired, but I was a new mom. I had my second baby and I completely tanked. And then I got over the breastfeeding hump. I thought it was that. When that was done, I was still exhausted, couldn't function. And I kind of just assumed this was my new normal. Mm-hmm. And it's just no, 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 no. You know, you've had Hashimoto's is basically what's most likely happened. That sort of just killed off a decent amount of your thyroid. And now you're left with this poorly, poorly functioning thyroid, leaving you fatigued, brain fog, depressed, weight gain, constipated, low sex drive, among 15 other things, you know?
And are those the things that you, like, how do women differentiate those pieces? Because that postpartum phase is, I'm going to say traumatic for lack of a better term, but it is a level of fatigue and responsibility and expectation that I think few of us have ever encountered in that way before. At least if we'd encountered it before, we had the option of quitting. Here we don't. So what sort of things do you communicate to women in terms of, and you mentioned a few just now, in terms of watching for, to help them differentiate normal from common versus we got to look at thyroid? How do you communicate that?
You know, I fully respect that the postpartum phase is what Glennon Doyle refers to as brutiful, right? brutal and beautiful.
I love that.
Yeah, but there is an extent to where if your body is healthy and resilient, you're able to recover from that on at least like a weekly, bi-weekly basis.
Great point.
Or, yeah, you know what I mean? After my second child, I'd really built up my adrenal function and obviously I had my thyroid perfect, right? And I was not that tired. And it was crazy because it was a very challenging period. My daughter has special needs. And so it by no means was easier than my first. But if your body's set up for health and resiliency, you should not be, you know, a 3 or 4 on a 10-point scale of overall energy, vitality, and wellness. If you are experiencing those symptoms that we talked about, and really I say it's like 7 of the 15-ish. So it's the fatigue, brain fog, weight gain, low libido that we talked about, depression. Don't confuse that with postpartum if all of these other symptoms go along with it. Dry skin, you know, hair loss, although do include that in the postnatal period. That one's hardcore. You know, the weight gain, if I didn't already say that, brain fog, loss of the outer portion of your eyebrows, that kind of thing. If you've got 6, 7 of those, you need to see someone and get a thorough thyroid workup.
And let's talk about that thorough thyroid workup, because the experience of many of my patients when they come to see me is that they went to their physician and they ran their TSH and their TSH was normal and they said, your thyroid is fine. And then we get into this ideological debate where I say, listen, like, I don't think your thyroid's fine. We need to investigate it further. And they're like, oh, but my doctor said it is. Like, right. What, where does that... Everybody's right because everybody's coming at it from their own perspective. But where's the truth? Right. I know, right? But that's because they have their little blinders on and they've been taught to operate in this very small box. So like, right. What's the truth of thyroid when we back out and we're looking at it as a macrocosm and as a whole system and we stop looking at just one marker as the only indicator of thyroid success?
Right. The worst marker, right?
The worst.
The most meaningless of all the markers. And before I dig into this, let me plant this seed that you can tease out from everything else. If you're already on thyroid medication, and that is T-Resent, levothyroxine, or Synthroid, your TSH is no longer in any way a valuable marker to gauge your thyroid status. And it's too complicated to go into, but I'll leave that there. So people who are on medication, whose doctors keep telling them, you're fine, that's how I ended up in this. That's how I had my own thyroid crisis. It's not a reliable marker. And really what you need, as well as everyone else, to truly know if you have thyroid dysfunction is your TSH, your free T4, your free T3, your reverse T3, and your antibodies for Hashimoto's, which are TPO and thyroglobulin antibodies. Don't stress too much about ranges, because you can, at the end of this, we'll talk about my thyroid lab guide you can download to kind of get the skinny on that. But first of all, you need that. You need a full round of information. TSH is, oh my gosh, it is never enough. Second of all, really, really understand that when your doctor is looking at your lab work, he is holding back that, or she is holding back that piece of paper. And if it's not in bold or off to the side, it's normal. They're not using critical thinking. They're not looking at them from an objective manner. The problem with that method is twofold. Every lab's range of normal varies. So LabCorp in America to Quest is different. One Quest location to the Quest location 10 miles down the road is different. There is no standard. So how can we be accepting things as normal if there's no set standard? And when they set those standards, this is the most frustrating thing. They take a group of people out of their lab, they select them, and they formulate an average. They don't exclude people with hypothyroidism when they formulate that average. So someone who's comatose because of hypothyroidism and their TSH is 200 is in the same category as someone whose thyroid function is perfect. And what that does, statistically speaking, is it widens our data set. And it makes it so wide that people are allowed to be miserable and plagued with hypothyroidism for about, in my estimate, a decade before it drifts far enough out of range, speaking of their TSH, of course, before their doctor will say, yeah, you have hypothyroidism.
You got it yesterday.
Right. The same with diabetes. There was never any leading up to pre-diabetes or diabetes. It's just, oh, tick, you crossed over the line. Now you're diabetic.
It was that tic-tac last week.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a major source of frustration in my own practice, and I'm so glad you brought it up because I see it over and over again. Take us through a little bit, and I know you're going to give us the access to your downloadable thyroid reference guide, which is amazing. But take us through your approach to thyroid care. How do you look at it? Because it's obviously not going to just be here's the supplement or here's the drug you take and you're good to go, which is how people have been trained to approach their thyroid. It's going to be much more multidimensional than that.
Right. So, you know, thyroid is certainly people's entry point into my practice, but I do practice a full scope of functional medicine. So no system, especially endocrine, stands alone, right? So, of course, we address other systems that interact with that. But the first step is getting all the adequate information. And instead of it being like a checkbox system of, oh, well, all your labs were in the normal range, my normal range, you're fine. For me, it's more about understanding biochemically and physiologically what is happening with these people's thyroid, how it's working or where it's not working, and then figuring out why. And most of the time, that issue, that hiccup, happens in what I call conversion of your inactive hormone to your active, your T40 or T3, and many things play into that conversion process. So obviously, we want to improve those if it is due to poor conversion. Then, of course, you have to address the adrenals. You have to take a multifaceted approach to these people. And then, especially, I can't emphasize this enough, with Hashimoto's, and Isabella Wentz has done a phenomenal job of advocating for this realm of this dimension of people. Hashimoto's is an autoimmune disease in which regular medicine tells you nothing can be done. They check the antibodies, they come back positive, they tell you you have Hashimoto's, and then they're basically like, we never have to worry about this again. There's nothing we can do. You have Hashimoto's. Well, functional medicine really views autoimmune disease as a lifestyle mediated and therefore modifiable. So we want to figure out what is propagating that response and intervene to put these people into remission, reducing the amount of thyroid gland they're losing, but also protecting them from future autoimmune diseases.
And this I find so fascinating that you have these two systems of medicine. Everyone is highly trained. And yet on the functional side, we look at these antibodies as this massive red flag that the body is dysfunctioning and we need to intervene. And on the conventional side, they go, yeah, we'll just wait till that TSH is out of range and then we'll give you a drug to bring it down. Like where does that chasm come from? Because these are totally different approaches to the same problem. Yeah. And I'm going to give everyone credit and say everyone's intelligent here.
Oh, absolutely. It's just a different model. And I should go back. Clearly, I do treat with medication as well. I mean, my expertise is in sort of the finesse and the precision of thyroid treatment, which I believe is absolutely essential for people to get their life back, for women to get their lives back, because it's really my belief that people will not get their lives back until their thyroid dose is perfect. And of course, also addressing all of these other comorbid issues that are facilitating this breakdown. But speaking on the dichotomy of sort of our systems, I think at its core, it is boiled down to time. And our medical system in America has adopted the mindset that we have 8 minutes to spend with the patient. And from that creates limitations. And it's just unrealistic to expect physicians to be able to push those limitations and do more in an 8-minute model of medicine. And then from that, I think breeds training within the chasm of keeping everything within 8 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So now it's become the normal. And I mean, that's what I was trained in 8-minute medicine model. And I get emails probably on a weekly basis of frustrated people who want me to take insurance and don't understand why I don't.
Right.
And the reality is, if I could, I would. But for the 75 minutes that I spend with my patients the first time we meet, I would get paid between $37 and $97. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that you can have a practice
yeah.
and get paid $40 for 75 minutes. And if I could dumb down what I'm doing into 8 minutes, God knows I would. But then I couldn't give people the care that they need and is the reason they're coming to see me.
Right. 7 minutes abs don't work and 8 minute medicine doesn't work. Let's just break through all myths right now. McCall, can you talk a little bit, because you've mentioned it a few times, and we've certainly talked about this on the podcast before, but for people with thyroid who are suddenly attuned to what we're talking about, we're using the term adrenal fatigue, and I think we should contextualize that to how that works on a continuum. So I'll share how I have experienced things in my practice, and then I would love to overlie your experience on this. But I see in my practice that people come in with adrenal fatigue, and we'll set up what that means. And unmanaged adrenal fatigue seems to eventually always lead to a thyroid dysregulation, which I think we've talked about, but maybe put different language to it. Can you just talk about, in your own words, what adrenal fatigue is and whether you're seeing those same patterns in your practice population as well?
Yeah, it's interesting because I look at it in the opposite way, but I think both are right. So I'll first define what I'm talking about. So our adrenals are responsible for our stress response. When we get into a car accident, they hypersecrete cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, our fight or flight hormones. That increases our heart rate. It increases our respiratory rate. It allows us to escape the scary situation, right? And they're meant to handle that and do that very well for a lifetime. What they don't do well and what they can't handle is chronic everyday activation. Stress of driving to work for an hour, stress of being at work, stress of not sleeping enough, stress of staring at blue light screens from our phones or our computers all day, those sorts of things. At that point, they're secreting those hormones all day and night. And eventually, like anything that we're constantly working, they get tired. Now, regular medicine does not believe in adrenal fatigue, though I did find an article about it a couple months ago on the Mayo Clinic website, so maybe they're coming around. They believe that our adrenals either work perfectly, or I guess both of them at one time in one moment completely shut down and quit working, and we have Addison's disease. And adrenal failure, basically. They don't account for the process in between. Functional medicine and integrative medicine, those realms, have basically just termed it adrenal fatigue. There are people who say that's not a real thing, I guess because regular medicine doesn't believe in it. I do see it every single day in my practice. And I've seen people completely recover from it. I've recovered from it myself. So I absolutely believe in the reality of it. And the way that I've seen it function with thyroid is interesting because I discovered it in the opposite way of you, probably because my niche is a little different, but I'd get these thyroid patients to their perfect dose of thyroid medication, and they still would have thyroid symptoms that overlap heavily with adrenal symptoms. And then I would start addressing their adrenals. And about 2 years ago, I was like, this is not working. You know, this is delaying people getting their lives back by a few months. Mm-hmm. So now I almost always, or really always at this point, address their adrenals in some form or fashion as we move through thyroid treatment, because I view it as soon as someone's thyroid goes out, their adrenals compensate, and it's a good 10 to 15 years before they make it to my office.
Right.
So by that time, their adrenals have compensated for a decade and a half, and they're exhausted.
Yeah, it's so interesting. There's like this chicken or egg situation. Yes. That's really hard to, yeah, no, well, exactly. Right. And it is fascinating. And I think it speaks to this notion that what we're talking about is systems-based biology as opposed to siloed biology.
So, amen, sister.
Right. We don't have a thyroid expert over here and an adrenal expert over here. And somehow those two aren't related. What we're talking about are these integrated systems that are so much more complex than one discernible mechanism. For sure.
Absolutely.
Once you get someone back in a state of health and they are feeling better, what is your methodology or philosophy around maintenance? Like, what are some of those core things that you say to people as you are releasing them from your care, or the more chronic version or acute version of your care, I should say, that they need to be mindful of so that they can sustain this newfound state of health? Because it's so easy in our society. There are so many temptations that just rip you out of health so quickly. What do you talk to people about in terms of maintaining?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I wanted to to circle back to too, that relates to this, is the analogy you gave between our health and business. You create your safe platform and you build from there. And that is exactly what I view as my role in the health of my patients. I create a platform for mostly these women, these moms, right, who were in a spot where they could not do anything to improve their health themselves because they were too darn exhausted. So I give them that platform and then I ask them to build from there. You know, and that obviously includes a multifaceted approach. But when you get to that maintenance phase, when I get people to that maintenance phase, the biggest thing that I stress is reasonable expectations. Like, we don't live in a vacuum, especially not as women and as moms who have roles in multi kind of areas of this life, right? If you make small, consistent, manageable changes that you can sustain for the course of years, you will make a much bigger impact than going on an insanely strict diet or an insanely intense exercise regimen that you can keep for 3 weeks or heck, maybe 3 months max. And then you're like, this is impossible. I can't continue this. It's the true tweaks in our everyday life that change our health long term.
Consistency builds the cavern.
Yes, I love that. You're full of wisdom, lady. Full of it.
That is something I took from my friend Sachin Patel. He talks about that all the time. But we see anything that's massive that's ever happened in this world has happened slowly over time. It's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You can't just run up against it and hope that it starts to fall over. It just takes, these things take time.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
So how do you find balance in your own life? You have a busy practice. You are constantly dreaming up new things or have space to be able to act on them when they come your way, and you've got two kids. So what principles do you live by that keep this balance for you?
Yeah. You know, I'm still discovering this wisdom myself, but there are a few things that allow me to push myself a little bit more than I would be able to. I'm certainly one of those people who has had to enter functional medicine because I am pre-programmed for fatigue, you know? That's how so many of us end up in this. But green juice is like a staple for me. No matter what's going on in my life, if something isn't right, I'm always ramping up as many vegetables as I can get, and I can get as many as possible in a green juice. So green juice, as silly as it sounds, is huge for me. I get a ton of sleep. So I'm like a 9-hour lady, and I let my body recover. And running is also something that really works well for me. I clean eat by nature. I'm a celiac, but I push those boundaries now that I'm in my own maintenance phase as much as my body can withstand. But inflammation shows up as fatigue for me. So if I'm pushing myself, I have to eat really clean. And then, you know, a little bit of rosé every once in a while.
Yeah, I hear you on that part. Brilliant. Is meditation or mindfulness an active part of your health practice?
It really is. So I did a TEDx talk on this, and you can Google it and find it, but it was actually on sort of the essence of mindfulness in our interactions with others and being tethered and mindful to the humanity of everyone we meet. So I essentially practice mindfulness while I'm in my office all day with patients and throughout my encounters, like in my life. And then I'll go to like formal meditation classes as well. But mindfulness is something I've incorporated into the way that I walk through my day.
I love that. How are you finding the time to integrate this level of balance with two little people? Is this an incredibly supportive husband? Is this that you're hyper organized? Like what's the situation that enables this to happen?
Well, it's definitely, I mean, so far from a perfect scheme. Like this is an evolving thing for me that I'm constantly seeking, and I definitely haven't figured out the magic bullet yet. Probably the most consistent thing for me is flexibility in terms of things don't have to be rigid and organized for me to feel comfortable. So I can move through life and sort of be engaged with where I'm at in that moment. And that's probably the most consistent thing. Is that too esoteric?
No, but it's, I mean, if you have that capacity and that skill, then you don't have other needs, right? We're all so different. And I, you know, one of the things I always get concerned about when I talk to guests and it's a section in the end, and we're going to transition to that in a minute, where we start to look at some of the fundamentals of health. And we talk about morning routines and we talk about those different pieces. One of the things I get worried about is that people listening are like, oh gosh, I have to do all of these things to be able to, right? There's like multiple routes to Rome and you can't take them all. So, you know,
and sometimes you just got to roam.
Yes, you just got to cut through the forest. But we're not all going to get there the same way. And part of your decision on what route you're going to take is based on your own nature. And so having that capacity to be flexible and not needing that routine and structure means you just get to pick a different route.
I could use a little more routine and structure, I'm sure.
Right. And then we've all got those things, right? We're okay with flexibility, and then we need to bring those other pieces in. But I wanted to bring that piece up because we've had this like really great conversation about managing stress and thyroid. And then I don't want anyone on the other side saying, oh gosh, I'm not a runner. I am a yoga person, or I'm that. You've got to pick your route and you've got to listen to the principles behind what people are talking about. But I love it. The green juice is so key. People have this tendency, right? And this is where your thyroid goes out and your adrenals go out. You get really, really tired and you get fatigued and you're reaching for coffee or you're reaching for processed food. And you have to be disciplined in those states of busyness to support your body strategically.
Right. And if you just replace that sugar or carb with green juice, you will be shocked at how far it actually takes you.
Such a good point. I was thinking about making myself some coffee after this, and I'm going to go have a green smoothie instead. See, look at it. You're just changing lives right in the moment. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. All right. So this is a really great place to transition, McCall. What I do in the second half of the interview, in the last little part, is I have something called KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we would have these in your business, I believe that we have them with respect to our health as well. So I've got six quick questions for you, if you'll indulge me, that give us a little bit of insight in terms of who you are and how you're living your life.
Let's do it.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
The most consistent thing about my morning routine is bulletproof coffee.
Yeah, nice. I'll take that too.
Yeah.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Nonfiction, always. Right now, I am reading Love Warrior by Glennon Doyle Melton and Daring Greatly by Brené Brown.
Love Warrior. I haven't heard of it. I'm going to have to check it out.
Oh, you must. It's fantastic.
Okay. On my list. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Honestly, it's probably supplements, which probably is not the right answer in this case, but it is probably the most consistent thing about my health.
No, time and place.
Right.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I'm fluent in Italian.
I love it. Hence the Love Warrior. There's this whole side we didn't get into. What do you do for fun or play?
I love live music. It's my jam.
Amazing.
Not playing, watching.
So great, right? We just need to step back and relax sometimes. Right. Last question, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
We learn. We learn, and you can always keep learning.
She says that with such definity. I love it. McCall McPherson, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. I know people are going to want to follow up and learn more about what you're doing, and we will link to everything. But where can people go right now to find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so you can go to my Facebook page at McCall McPherson, PA-C. And if you want to download the thyroid lab guide, it's free. You just go to McCallMcPherson.com. www.ontopology.com/gift.
Amazing. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a great time. This has been very, very enlightening for me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Ontopology podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.